Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Soul Up with Kayleen Welsh. I am thrilled to be sitting this afternoon with my new and old good friend, Jerome McGeorge. And Jerome is a person that, I guess I'll let Jerome say hello in a minute here, but I want to give just a little bit of introduction, because Jerome is a person that I had heard about as an elder, a wisdom person, for some time. I had heard that he was a really great astrologist, and of course that appealed to me because, you know, I'm trying to learn and understand what's going on cosmically myself. And so we lived in the same town for a number of years here, but we've never really connected until fairly recently. And I'm grateful. And this is where I say that Jerome is an old friend too, because this might be a little bit woo-woo for some of you. But at the same time, I am very aware that Jerome has been a teacher to me in the past. And so we've had some really great conversations about, you know, just, I don't know, I'm going to say consciousness and higher order thinking and what might be, you know, ideas around reincarnation and what's the bigger purpose of this whole life and just so many things that we've talked about. And so I always want to share some of that wisdom when I find it with the rest of you guys. So, you know, thank you for tuning in and spending a little bit of time. And Jerome, thanks for hanging out with me this afternoon.
You're so welcome, Kayleen. And of course, you referenced past connection, and you have been a teacher and an explorer of reincarnation, a very important subject to me. And we, in terms that you have connected us in consciousness, have shared at least one past life. And it is a realization of mine that we live in a culture here in America, and in fact, in Europe, in South America, all of the parts of the world influenced by the Abrahamic religions. And Judaism is the original Abrahamic religion, and Abrahamic indeed, because Abraham, the first prophet. And yet, Christianity and Islam are derivatives of Judaism, and that the Abrahamic teaching, which I want to describe as perhaps a prison of consciousness, and that prison is that we only have one life to live. To open to the idea of consciousness existing over many lifetimes is, for many people in the American culture, not in realization that a majority of the 8 billion of us alive today believe in reincarnation. And my reference point is the ancient and existent Chinese culture and the ancient Ayurvedic Indian culture, and that many other, particularly Native American cultures, have a primary belief in reincarnation, and that I want to be someone who is opening all of us to the ideas of the consciousness that survives and the idea that we have all been here before.
I think that that's a really interesting thing to think about as far as continuity of consciousness. You know, you've raised the idea of it, even of consciousness. And as we talk about what's happening in the world today, there's an idea that there's this elevation of consciousness that is happening for us, this rise into the fifth dimension. So just, would you relate the words consciousness and energy, vibration? How do you conceptualize or speak to consciousness?
Well, you frame it firstly in terms of energy. And of course, it is a realization, the subject of consciousness itself, the subject of reincarnation, that it is non-material, that the material basis of world science is exchanges of mass and energy, and that we can only understand or have any belief, according to science, in what is material reality. Consciousness as a subject, as a phenomenon that all of us are examples, and that energy is non-material. We cannot explain the consciousness stream in material ways. And yet, part of science is the modern ideas of relativity and quantum theory, and that we understand that Carl Jung, being someone I really want to identify as an incredible explorer of consciousness. And Freud and Jung revolutionized the world at the end of the 19th century with concepts of collective consciousness, the dream world, the world of mythology, the world of, in collaboration, especially in Jung's investigations, with Einstein and relativity, Planck and others with quantum theory, that we have examples of non-causative connection, that there is connection in terms of quanta in non-predictive, acausal connection, and that consciousness, alive as a stream, we want to recognize, even in conventional history, that there has been development of consciousness. And the study of history is maybe a study of psychology in terms of the transformations of human consciousness over especially the last 6,000 years, the time of written language where we've been recording. Language as a human phenomenon, and one wants to say also true, there is consciousness other than Homo sapiens. But we have language centers in our brains which are connected to verbal consciousness, oral consciousness, that go back at least 75,000 years. Written language, on the other hand, has no significant similar consciousness in our brains, and any of us who have learned to write and read know the definite training and consciousness that must be slowly developed through sounds and the symbols of written language. And there's nothing natural about written language, as is true of oral language. And so, in terms of all of this thinking, that we, Kaylaine and I, have been discussing Native Americans, where some, going into Native American myth, going into Native American oral consciousness, that through Native American mythology in particular, Mayan mythology, but to also move out of strictly American sources, there is the traditions, as I have mentioned, of China and India, and that there is a recognition in myth that we have had consciousness streams that have only been recorded since written history, which is only at most 6,000. And in terms of the alphabet is only 3,000 years old, and that it is through a point that is very, very significant. We connect with the ancestors' wisdom through Native Americans in a more superior fashion than any other.
So consciousness then, it sounds, if I can try to like summarize some of that, you said a lot there, Jerome, there's a lot to take in. Consciousness essentially then, in some ways, is expansion of mind, expansion of being. And it seems like then, if we look at the history of mankind, this is what's been happening all along, this continual evolution of consciousness. Is that fair to say? That is that evolution at the same time?
I certainly agree with what you're speaking, Kayleen, that we do recognize an evolution, which wants to suggest the word progression of consciousness.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, and are we, I want to ask, and this is a question we might ask of science and technology, that are science and technology progressive, or have science and technology, under the control, almost total dominance of modern corporations, been the cause of devolution? That devolution is particularly a reality of the ecological destruction of Earth, the planetary resources that allow human and all my relations, our very existence. And are we, in a devolving sense, creating the destruction, or, as E.O. Wilson has brilliantly pointed out over the last 40 years, inventing the concept of mass extinction of all species? And are we in the continuing, increasing extinction of other species, setting up the consequences of our own extinction?
You raised some interesting words in my mind, both from the devolution, evolution, revolution. It just feels like, is maybe even as we look at the history here, is there a cycle of that where we devolve, revolve, evolve? And so it is interesting. It's almost like a dance, right? It's almost like, you know, the step forward and the step back and the step forward. And I think even in that breath. But yeah, I mean, I think that's a fair question. Are we evolving? And is this evolution, is humanity becoming more or less? Or what really are we doing here? And certainly the state of the world right now is a very interesting, it's a very interesting time to be alive. There is a lot happening. You know, Jerome and I have had some even conversations around, are we going forward? Are we going backward? Are we going to be able to find our way through this and create something, a new, better world? Or are we heading toward this place of destruction? And Jerome, you talk about it, and this has been one of the things that's come up in, you know, we've been working together a bit on this Changing of the Gods series, and not to get too much into that, but it's really talking a lot about some astrological placements and the influence of astrological cosmic interactions on human activity and experience, the connection between the two. And as we, and that's one of the things that's raised, is this paradox of progress, or how do you talk about that?
Well, some that the series Kayleen just mentioned, Changing of the Gods, a documentary series of 10 episodes based primarily on Richard Tarnas's amazing text, Cosmos and Psyche.
And you can find both the book on Amazon, of course, and Cosmic and Psychic, or you can find the series Changing of the Gods on YouTube.
Correct. And some, it is, as Tarnas posits in his text, Cosmos and Psyche, we are in a clash of paradigms, a paradigm of progress, and whether it's science and technology, whether it's human rights, whether it is an evolution of psyche and cycles that we can some measure in terms of astrological phenomena. And that Tarnas identifies his astrology as archetypal astrology, and that the evolution of humans throughout the last, and I was discussing the evolution of both oral and written language, that in the period of written language, Tarnas, a text which preceded Cosmos and Psyche, The Passion of the Western Mind, he delves into historical cycles and how we can relate in archetypal astrology, and particularly with the modern planets, modern in that they were unknown before, in the case of Uranus, the period of the American and French Revolution, in terms of the outer planet Neptune, the 1840s, another very revolutionary period, and finally, the discovery of Pluto in 1930, a very significant time between two world wars. So I am someone born in 1941, and when we're looking at the paradigm of progress or the clash of the paradigm of progress with the paradigm of the fall, I would reference the Mayan civilization, Mayan culture, which perfected the extraordinary Mayan calendar, and there has been extraordinary research over the last 100 years into the marvels of the Mayan calendar. But in terms of this discussion that Kayleen just was prefacing, that the Mayans identified over 2,000 years ago. The Mayan calendar was perfected just before the time of Christ, over 2,000 years ago. That the Mayans delineated a period beginning at 843 after the birth of Christ, as we could call it AD, or in modern terms, the Common Era. The Mayans specified a period of 13 cycles of 52 years each, which would end at 1519. They describe, we translate, these cycles as the darkening, the disappearance of the light. After the 13 cycles commencing at 843 and ending at 1519, beginning 9 cycles, 52 years each, of hell periods. And that the hell periods would be decreasing circumstances of life on Earth and more violence, And the last hell period commenced at 1935 and ended in 1987. The Mayan calendar, as best we can translate or probe and investigate the meaning, that we are today in a time out of time, a time between ages, a time that ended in the terrible violence between world 1935, the beginning of the ninth hell period, was only 17 years after the end of World War I. The world was in a total depression that 1935, and that World War II commenced that very year with the Italian invasion of Ethiopia and Africa and the Japanese invasion in 1935 of the mainland, beginning with Manchuria in Asia. That we are not only in a period of devolution, as I've just been describing the Mayan calendar prediction, but we are between ages, and we are in a realization. It is up to us, and it is us who is creating the mass extinction of other species. We are creating the ecological devolutions, whether it's climate change, the depletion of fresh water, the salination and death of the oceans. Some are saying the truth of worldwide water is aquifers plunging, rivers running dry, lakes disappearing, glaciers melting, and oceans dying.
Oh boy, that's a lot to take in there, Jerome, again. And you know, it's just an interesting, as we are alive, all of us that are listening here are alive in this time. It feels so important that we maybe connect more with some of this indigenous wisdom, that we, as even talking about consciousness, it feels like, you know, we're trying to find this blend of heart and mind and somehow lift the way that we engage with life and life around us, with the earth, with each other. Somehow or other, something has to change, or where are we going? And I don't know what question I have in the midst of that, or I don't even know what to say other than, what can we do? As you see these things happening, it sounds like you're very aware of indigenous wisdom, and that may be a place of resource for us. But as people here on the planet, what do you think we most need to be aware of or do? How can we make a difference?
What comes to mind, Kayleen, remember has a deeper meaning. Remember is the magic of memory. And we can even distinguish between such phenomena as short-term memory, long-term memory, and of course, going back, as in a wonderful modern development, is a reevaluation, a recovery of the magic of myth. And there have been some, like Joseph Campbell, that have been extraordinary in terms of our new inquiries into myth. And that one aspect of myth is, as I started to say, the deeper meaning of remember is not memory, which is magical itself, but we are members one of another. And that realization, in some way, to make sense of my remarks at this juncture, that consider, China is not the enemy. Consider that it is ancient human wisdom that we're in the fall. We are in devolution whenever we delineate enemies. We must leave enemy think behind. And if we are going to make a better world, if we're going to become more members one of another with a sense of the preciousness of all life, including all my relations, not just human life, but that thus in the current discussions of world reality, China must become our ally. And as at a wonderful realization in my own consciousness, attending the incredible International Survival Gathering called by Native Americans in 1980, and there's a lot of story behind the International Survival Gathering, but the incredible elder Fool's Crow, a late Native American elder who, a contemporary of Black Elk. And Fool's Crow spoke to us. He was 90 at the time, and he was speaking only in his native Lakota, which had to be translated. He declared, "The red man and the white man cannot be friends." And he said it with an emphasis that was immediately stark, and then subsequently explained that we couldn't be friends because of everything that had gone down in terms of the annihilation of Native American cultures throughout North and South America. On the other hand, we needed thus to become allies, to develop projects of mutual understanding and mutual well-being, and we could become friends, but it's not to say that we could instantly transform. And I'm suggesting in a modern context, our attitude, which both Democrats and Republicans, China is the enemy, and of course that is subsequent to Russia is, the Soviet Union is the enemy, and it's them we must fight. Such thinking must transform, must change, or we will continue to violently destroy each other and the conditions that support life on Earth.
Yeah, you know, one of the scary things about all of this as we look at what's going on is it feels like change occurs most as a result of pain, of difficulty. And I guess it's, you know, that idea of hitting bottom. You know, how much bottom do we have to hit before we recognize that we have to do something different? And yet I appreciate earlier in our conversation you talked a bit about science, you know, getting so, you know, we look for proof. We want science to support what we've been learning. And, you know, certainly there's been so many advances. You know, I love the continual learning of knowledge. You know, like, you know, quantum science has opened up a whole world of understanding how things interact in a way that we never really had before. So in many ways, that takes me back to ancient wisdom ideas about thoughts and consciousness, and I mean these intangible kind of vibrational creativity, forgiveness, acceptance, some of these more, I don't know, I think of them as higher consciousness perspectives, but it just feels like science and, I don't like the word religion, philosophy, higher knowledge, somehow is coming together. And can we use that? Is that something even that if we can open our minds, if we can try to, I don't know, think about things in beyond the concrete. It just feels we've gotten so concrete. So much of our problem is focused around stuff, capitalism, money, greed. I mean, it just control. There's just so much heaviness there. I just hope that, I guess, in some kind of ways, even back to the idea of consciousness, that people can open up in some kind of way to recognize that there is so much more. And I think that's the Native American teachings we're trying to offer. There is a greater spirit to the earth. There is a greater connection that we have to life around us, to the cosmos. I hope that we can find our ways to embrace some of that higher thinking or more connected thinking, that all is one, because it just feels so important. And
wow, Kayleen. Some, you're triggering thoughts, and especially we're now discussing consciousness, as you've been discussing. And that one example, and I want to also say that it is an instinct that the word I'm wanting to introduce into this discussion is empathy. And empathy is a real example of consciousness, and empathy is non-material. And that empathy, I want to say, and I also want to suggest, is a characteristic of other than human consciousness, but to keep it in a human context, that empathy, in my insights, is an instinct. We all are capable of empathy. Some, obviously, more adept or more evidenced in their empathic consciousness, and others less. There are even people who deny the wisdom or the existence of empathy. But I think empathy is undeniable, and I want to say it is an inner instinct of our consciousness, and I want to contrast it then with another profound concept, the concept of compassion. And in my own thinking, I want to see empathy as instinct, but compassion as a path of wisdom, a path of experience gathering, of wisdom gathering, and that one characteristic of compassion is selfless love. Love not just ego-based, but love, we can maybe say, love for the sake of love. For the mysteries of compassion, the mysteries of love, which cannot be defined, and that love is kind of a master archetype with incredible variations of meaning, including in our own individual consciousness, but certainly in the realm of collective consciousness. And that compassion is a quality of first consciousness, but also of being, where we do cherish one another, where we do follow the golden rule, which is, as in my understanding, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And that we need such emphasis in a new way of creating structures of governance, structures of social reality among the bewildering number of 8 billion of us on the planet right now. And that one contrast to this incredible growth of human population, it was only 100 years ago, in the 1920s, that humans first reached the number of 2 billion, and it had taken all of human history, 100, maybe 300,000 years, that Homo sapiens, science wants to say, first appeared, to reach 1 billion. That was 1820s, the period of post-Napoleonic wars, that only 100 years later, all of a sudden, there is 2 billion in the 1920s, recovering from not only World War I and the major destruction, but recovering from the incredible millions of humans who died in the Great Flu epidemic, 1918 to 1920 approximately. And yet, consider, only 100 years later, we have grown to 8 billion, four times as many people as were alive in 1920, and eight times as many people as were alive in 1820, and this is very recently in the considerations we're discussing, that I have four resolutions for revolutions in consciousness that are an attempt to describe the challenges confronting us. And my first resolution is re-enchant cosmos. The second resolution is re-inhabit paradise, to return again to the circumstances that were prior to the European conquest of the world at around 1500, and indeed the very time that the Mayans indicated would be the beginning of the nine hell periods. And that third, so re-enchant cosmos is cosmic. Re-inhabit paradise is planetary. The third resolution, re-examine our life-denying, life-destroying lifestyles, is an individual circumstance. And the fourth resolution, re-inhabit, restore transpersonal consciousness, which again is into the consciousness of empathy, of compassion, of beginning to treat each one another in radically different fashion.
You just said so much there again, Jerome, that's just really so beautiful to think about. Those four resolutions, each one can be broken down, and I guess I would invite myself and everyone listening to really think about those four pieces and what can you do in your own life? How can you do that? How can you re-enchant cosmos?
Re-inhabit paradise.
Re-inhabit paradise. We do live in a beautiful, abundant world. We've been gifted with this amazing place to live, with all the plants, all the things that we need to live here in a beautiful, abundant way. And so reclaiming that as paradise is beautiful to me. And then, okay, the third one.
Re-examine our life-denying, life-destroying lifestyles.
Oh, boy, and there's so many things that each one of us can do on an individual basis there. Everything from the recycling and what are we eating and how are we handling our lives and how much stuff do we accumulate. So many pieces that we can think about there. And number four.
Realize transpersonal consciousness. How do we... Ego development is necessary for every new human being. And ego consciousness is a consciousness of survival, a consciousness of the joy of learning, a consciousness of what is wisdom gathering, and that is an individual path of living the life as best we can. Now, It is also, as I want to suggest, a path that realizes selfless love, that the ego development that is so necessary, and for me, there are, out of astrology, three profound human cycles, and that I'm referencing the cycles of Saturn. And Saturn has a period of 28 to 29 years before it returns to the place it was in individual lives, the point of where Saturn was at your birth, and that at approximately 29 years, it returns. And that the period of the first 29 years of every human life is a period of development. Ego development, skill development, educational development, and that modern thinking, and even ancient thinking, that once we achieve sexuality, a very profound part of human development, and that even leads to procreation, that we become parents. But also in the first 29 years, we evolve careers. And so that while an age of majority might be said to be 18, might used to be more 21, however in times past, it could be as young as 13 or 15, achieving the ability to procreate, that really we are developing all through the first 29 years of life. And that some, of course, develop more quickly than others, or maybe some would say more profoundly. But to briefly then suggest the period 29 to 58, what we call second Saturn return at 58, when Saturn comes back to the birthplace, that is the period I want to call mature adult powers. And folks between 29 and 58 are the people carrying the concerns of the world, organizing the affairs of the world, and creating the circumstances of moving through our adult powers. Now, at 83, I'm getting close to a third Saturn return, and I want to simply say that beyond 58, and I think in the beginning of the transition, and of course for many people, it is the period of grandparenting, but that there's a kind of baby old person reality to the early 60s, but at 83, I'm definitely deep into old age, and all of the qualities of decay that are a natural part of that process, and also the perfection of wisdom, and particularly what we can all relate to as love wisdom.
Well, we live and we learn, don't we? And we do change. And I appreciate that idea of, you know, we need to develop that ego. That's a piece of our growth. And that then, I guess I like to think of it as we experience life, we also then rise into, I don't know whether the word soul is appropriate, this higher level of consciousness and a more transpersonal approach, awareness of our greater connection. And so I guess there's a lot we could talk about, Jerome, but I think everybody listening can get a sense today of why I so much enjoy our conversations. because we get to go into some really deep places, and there's just a lot that you have to share. And, you know, it is an interesting time for everyone on the planet as we're trying to figure out our way through. And I think it is very important that we recognize that there is greater wisdom even that's available to us in our roots, in our ancestral lines, in our indigenous people, and in our sciences, in the wisdom that's coming forward, knowledge that we never acknowledged before. And so how do we continue to move together as a species? And there's something very important about rising into these this higher level thinking. And I love your four resolutions. I think they give us all pieces very concretely, places where we can think, what can I do? What can I do to make a difference? What can I do to create this new world that hopefully we all get to experience at some point or another, some lifetime or another, that this planet sustains and we sustain and onward we go. So I guess we have to wrap up. Our time today is out. I so look forward to our next conversation and grateful for your time today.
I would love to just very briefly end with my three hopes for a better world of human affairs. And hope number one is more women in leadership. Number two is listen to the voice of youth. And number three is listen to the voice of the ancestors, which we know most familiarly as the voice of Native Americans and their depth of connection to myth and the culture of our ancient ways.
Thank you for that, Jerome. All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time. And until then, shine on.
Oh, my goodness gracious, beautiful oasis with that voice sweet as honey. Birdie in the air, nothing can compare. You're worth more than the whole world's money. Just to hear that sweet voice even brings the bees joy. Pour it on me warm, sweet honey. Every word you say, if you sing it in that way, yeah, you can make a gray sky sunny. Warm, sweet honey.